Hello, friend. Perfectionism. Do you flaunt it as a badge of honor? Are you exhausted by the constant efforts to be flawless? Today, we're going to take a deep dive into perfectionism. You'll take away some tips for recognizing it and for managing it. Welcome to the Free Me from OCD podcast. We're here to offer you educational resources, coaching, and community support to help you say yes to your life by saying no to OCD. I'm Dr. Vicki Rackner, your podcast host and OCD coach. I call in my experience as a mother of a son diagnosed with OCD when he was in college, a surgeon, and a certified life coach to help you get in the driver's seat of your life. My vision is to help you move towards a future in which OCD is nothing more than the background noise of your full life. This information is intended as an adjunct and not a substitute for therapy. So let's dive into today's episode. Truman Capote once reflected about his friend Babe Paley. She had only one flaw. She was perfect. Otherwise, she was perfect. Those sentences capture the paradox of perfectionism. You might get praise about your attention to every detail. Perfection can make you desirable in the eyes of others. And perfectionism can stand in the way of the very results you want to achieve. Here are two reasons that people strive for excellence. The first is that you care about what you think. You're always trying to evolve and grow. You shoot for the stars and then you're happy when you wind up at the moon. This is not what I mean by perfectionism in this conversation. Let's call this instead healthy striving. Perfection is all about what other people think about you. And this is an important difference. Healthy striving is an expression of empowerment and strength that helps you get from good to great. Perfectionism is an expression of fear that's designed to help you avoid danger and stay safe. Here are three reasons that perfectionism is such a problem for people either with or without OCD. First, you cannot control what other people think. You can only control what you think. Second, there's no such thing as perfect. And third, your efforts to achieve this unattainable perfection will backfire on you. Colleen is a dental hygienist who's learning to manage her OCD. Now, doing a good job has always been important to Colleen. The dentist who came in to examine the patient's teeth after her cleaning always told the patient, "Oh, look at what a great job Colleen did for your teeth." Her patients liked her, the staff liked her. Then one day, as she describes it, Herman the Monster, that's the name she gave to her OCD monster, showed up at work. As she was finishing up with a patient, Herman said, "You think you're done with that patient? You left some plaque. Go back and remove it." So she spent an extra 10 minutes, which meant that she was 10 minutes late for the next patient. Now Herman was telling her that doing a good job was not enough. She had to be perfect. So now Colleen was more aggressive about looking for hidden plaque. Her patients started complaining about more discomfort as Colleen dug deeper into the gums. Her dentist employer took her aside and told her that the patient's gums look inflamed. Was she doing something differently in her cleaning? The front office gal told her that patients were complaining because they had to wait so long. Colleen began to doubt whether she could even do a good job, much less be perfect. For Colleen, Herman the Monster's new demand for perfection in her work was nothing more than a new compulsion. But you don't have to have OCD to have perfectionistic habits, and the presence of perfection seeking does not mean that you have OCD. In fact, perfectionism is very common. I was working with one of my business colleagues and I said, gotta run and record a podcast about perfectionism. And he said, oh, send me the podcast. I struggle with that myself. Brené Brown has studied perfectionism and its relationship with vulnerability and shame. She says that perfectionism is a self-destructive and addictive belief system that's fueled by this primary thought. If I look perfect and I do everything perfectly, I can avoid or minimize the painful feelings of blame or judgment or shame. She says, when perfectionism is driving, shame is always riding shotgun, and fear is the annoying backseat driver. You might have real-life experience that makes you consciously aware of the dangers of making mistakes. You might have been shamed as a child for not knowing the answers in class, or embarrassed for some physical attribute. People may have laughed at you when you offered an idea in a meeting. Perfectionism can cause harm to many people. When my son was young, I used to let him choose his clothes. I would describe fashion guidelines, like both of your socks and both of your shoes should be the same color. Don't wear plaids with stripes. My son's creative spirit was not going to be squelched about these silly fashion taboos. I don't know whether the other kids gave him grief about what he wore, but if they did, my son didn't care. He dressed to the beat of his own drummer. His grandmother was a different story. She could have written the perfectionism how-to handbook. She cared deeply about what others thought. One day she was visiting us when my son came out of his room wearing striped pants, a Hawaiian shirt, and he was asking me to clip on his bow tie. His grandmother looked at him and asked me in front of him, "Are you really going to let him leave the house looking like that? What will the teacher and the other moms think?" The shameful element in this story was not about what other people would think about my son's clothes. It's that my son now knew that a stranger's opinion about what he wore was more important to his grandmother than her relationship with him. He learned that it wasn't safe to be himself around his grandmother. That comment wounded their connection, and my son has not forgotten. So, I recommend Brené Brown's book, The Gift of Imperfection, and I'll leave a link in the show notes. I highly recommend it. And if you enjoy reading, I also recommend Carol Dweck's book, Mindset. She describes two mindsets, the fixed mindset and the growth mindset. The author, who's a Stanford psychologist, says that she herself was the perfect child. She believed that her perfectionism would lead her to a life of success. Through her research, though, she found quite the opposite. The people who were most successful had a growth mindset, not a fixed mindset. And as she reflected, she considered that that made a lot of sense. When she was a child, and people would invite her to take on a new challenge, like being part of the spelling bee, she turned it down. Why risk her reputation as somebody who's perfect on an activity that could uncover flaws? Who would she be if she weren't perfect? People who chase perfection understand it doesn't make sense. Intellectually, they concede that perfection is an unattainable goal. They understand that perfection-seeking behaviors defy logic. They may fully understand the high personal price they pay from their perfectionistic habits. They're anxious. They may be burned out. Their own jobs and relationships may be threatened. It makes them miserable. So how and why is it so hard for them to give up perfectionism, even when it causes so much damage? Well, it's because we have human brains. When our hunter-gatherer ancestors faced the hungry saber-toothed tiger or any other predator, they would fight, flee, or freeze. These danger responses help them get back to safety. Well, our ancestors faced a different kind of threat that was also potentially lethal. Separation from the tribe meant almost certain death. To avoid the danger that comes with being kicked out of the tribe, there's a fourth danger response called fawning. You fawn over people. You earn your place in the tribe by being seen by others in a positive light. And it turns out that perfectionism and people-pleasing are cousins. They're both ways to reduce the risk that the tribe will reject you. Perfectionism is driven by this primal force to escape danger and stay safe. Now, all of this can happen below the level of conscious thought. People with perfectionist habits don't consciously say to themselves, "I'm unworthy and the only way I can earn my place is by never making a mistake." Instead, they experience the urge to keep trying to be perfect. Further, now there are literal pictures of perfection on social feeds, so this urge pushes harder. See, perfection's possible. Just try harder. You can see how the OCD monster would glom onto perfectionism. The OCD monster is always looking for potential threats and dangers that you might overlook. Maybe OCD themes like moral OCD or harm OCD come down to the idea, if you don't fit in, you'll be pushed out and die. Perfectionism is driven by the fear that if you just showed up as your authentic self, warts and all, you wouldn't be enough. Instead, you protect yourself with this cloak of perfectionistic habits that are certain to fail. Perfectionism is not a badge of honor. It's a set of behaviors that will keep you stuck. And you can learn different habits. So here are some exercises to help you shake free from perfectionism. You'll find a link to the worksheet in the show notes. First, please pay attention to the language you use around perfection. You might be tempted to say, "He's such a perfectionist." That's like saying, "He's so OCD." Perfection-seeking behaviors are what you do, not who you are. Further, these identities tend to glorify the very condition that does so much damage. Now, I invite you to look at areas of your own life in which you seek perfection. It might be your own habits, or maybe it's somebody else's habits that are impacting you. Describe some specific examples. "I need new towels, but when I go shopping, there's something wrong with all the towels I find, so I come home empty-handed." Okay, next, ask yourself, what's driving these actions? Is this healthy striving, or is it a way to avoid dangerous outcomes? So, are you having a hard time finding towels because you're sensitive to touch and you haven't found the towels that are as soft as the ones you used at the spa? Or are you worried about what people will think when they use your bathroom? Maybe the color has to be exactly perfect. Next, ask yourself, how does my perfection seeking serve me or benefit me? Maybe you enjoy the compliments. Maybe your brain tells you something like, "Well, I've got to do it to do my job. I'd be terrible if I gave up chasing perfection." Then look and ask yourself, is that true? In most cases, perfectionism creates the very results you're trying to avoid. So let's say the perfection seeker is working on a report. They don't want to miss this deadline. Then they get an email from their boss asking, "How's the report coming? Do you need anything from me?" Now, within the context of their relationship, this is a completely reasonable question. Yet, they feel called out on their procrastination that so often accompanies perfectionism. Then they invest 3 hours crafting the perfect email response to their boss, fully aware that they just stole 3 hours that they could have invested making progress on the report. What if perfectionism contributes to your missing deadlines or ignoring responsibilities because you just don't have time? Would you say that employee is good at their job? Next, ask, what are some of the costs you pay for perfectionism? If you have the drive for perfection, how much anxiety do you have over being perfect? Are you burned out? How has this impacted your relationships or your education? If the person with the perfectionist habits is somebody you love, like my son's grandmother, how have these habits impacted you and your family? Now, if you have perfectionistic habits, imagine that you have an assistant who walks around all the time with you, and this assistant is responsible for getting things perfect. Consider having a conversation with your assistant. Ask, why is being perfect so important? What's the difference between perfect and good enough? Are there any situations in which good enough is good enough? And then here's one I think you're really going to enjoy. Practice making on-purpose mistakes. I remember watching a TED Talk given by a man who said that his fear of rejection was holding him back. He decided to take it head-on with an intervention he called rejection therapy. Every day, he'd intentionally put himself in situations in which he knew people would say no. He'd go into a fast food restaurant and ask, "Can I get a refill of hamburgers? You know, you get free refills of drinks. I'd like a hamburger refill." He asked a Krispy Kreme employee to make him donuts in the configuration of the Olympics logo. And they actually did it. I'll leave a link to his TED Talk. What if you tried mistake therapy? Every day you would challenge yourself to make a mistake that showed the world that you are not perfect. Maybe you wear unpaired socks, or maybe you wear a red clown nose. You intentionally set out an email with a spelling error. When you're walking your dog, you skip instead of walk. You set a goal that's absolutely impossible to achieve and try it anyway. This exercise will give you some practice and show you that nobody's going to die if you make a mistake in your day-to-day life. You're going to live through it. Everyone's going to live through it. Let us know, what mistakes do you set up and how did the mistake therapy work for you? And last, know that if you're managing OCD and you identify compulsions that are related to your perfectionist habits, bring them to your therapist and do some ERP work on them. That's what Colleen, the dental hygienist, did, and she had great results. So just to wrap up, it's tempting to see perfectionism as a desirable or positive quality. However, now you see perfectionism for what it really is. It's an unhealthy habit that does more harm than good. In fact, it can be downright dangerous. Perfectionism habits can be unlearned. You can switch from this fixed mindset to a growth mindset. Well, thank you for stopping by. I hope that you found value in this episode. If so, please feel welcome to share this with family and friends and community members. We'd also love to hear about your on-purpose mistakes. And if no one has told you yet today, I admire your courage and your strength. Managing OCD may be the hardest job I've ever had. So whether you're an OCD warrior managing your own brain, or whether you're an OCD champion caregiver, you are not alone. There's hope for a better tomorrow. You've got this. I'll see you next time, friend.